Welcome back, everyone, to the Electric Podcast. This week, we have a big week because we have a special guest, and you know him, or at least you know his voice if you've been listening to the conference call this week. Of course, as usual, Seth is with us. Say hi to Seth, everyone. But we also have Galileo Russell from Hyperchange TV, and now best known for being the official Tesla retail investor representative on the conference call. How are you doing?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Doing great.
All right, awesome. So Galileo is the perfect guest this week because, of course, we're going to talk about the earnings call pretty much all the time. Though I have put two other articles in the list that we are going to talk about if we have time. They were pretty big this week, and I think they are important. So we're going to try to get to them. But we are going to start with the earnings. And should we start with the earning call itself, maybe? Because that was the most special thing about this week's earning, this quarter's earning, basically. It started off pretty normal. The shareholder letter was fun, with pretty rich in information, I think we can all agree on. But then the conference call started. We got like three or four questions maybe from regular analysts that we know of. And maybe two questions in, I started thinking, oh, it's going to be a boring one. It's the same thing. They're just repeating stuff from the shareholder letter. Then Deepak, they tried to get the clarification for Deepak, and his clarification is just reading back the letter to them. It's just so boring. But then Elon Musk said, this is just too dry. We go to YouTube. And then who's come next? It's Galileo who comes next. So how nervous were you at that very point when he said we're going to YouTube?
I was kind of freaking out. I mean, I was ready to go because I've been expecting like to be in the queue and get a question. So I had like, luckily my notes right in front of me and like word for word for the first question. Otherwise, I don't know what would have happened, but.
Yeah. And I talked to you just like a few hours before and you were really working on it. Like you talked to a bunch of people. You talked with the guy from the other Tesla podcast.
Yeah, Tesla Daily. Thank you to you for helping me, and Tesla Daily and Trent Eady, because I mean, like, just the Tesla, and also all the people who emailed, like, just got so much help and support. It was awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, the bond question prepared, but of course they tell you that it's going to be one question and one follow up, like any other. But that didn't happen at all because I mean, it felt like an hour. It felt like it was just the whole call was. Yeah, I don't even remember the other. At the end, there was a few other questions that were not too bad from the analyst. But I felt like pretty much the whole call was with you and Elon talking, and it was so refreshing. I mean, especially with the first few questions that were just boring as hell. So what did we actually learn from it? I mean, the first one was about the Waymo question, the first one, right?
Yeah, the Tesla network. Yep.
The Tesla network. And I mean, this one was kind of surprising because, the answer, we didn't get that much from the answer because the biggest thing we get, we got a timeline again, it's end of next year, but pretty much it's often the end of next
year. Yeah, I mean, the Tesla network came from the master plan part two.
Yeah.
At the end of that letter, they kind of spelled out the Tesla network and like this. I mean, it's still crazy to think about in 2 years or 3 years that they plan to have, you know, driverless Teslas running around the cities, picking people up and dropping them off. But, you know, that was even crazier a year ago or whenever the Master Plan 2 came out. So, you know, he reiterated that. He gave kind of a timeline on that. I don't know if that differed much from I can't remember if there was even a timeline on the master.
Well, there was recently, there was a comment recently that was in line with that, with the end of next year. But the way that was interesting is that the way Galileo framed it, it was with the Waymo timeline, which is the end of 2018, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically 6 months from now.
Yeah. But the interesting part about the question was the geographic rollout of it, I think, and he didn't address that at all, other than it's based on, of course, local regulation and everything. But I think that's the most interesting part because Waymo is only based on mapping a specific area and then rolling out their technology in that specific area. So at the end of the year, they're just going to be in Phoenix and that's it, which it's not a bad market. It's a pretty big market, but it's not. So the way I felt from it, what I got out of it is that it starts at the things by the end of next year. They're just going to be able to roll out the software just just power on the back end of the Tesla network, and then it's going to be able to go everywhere it's legally able to be activated. That's the way I got from it. I don't know about you guys. But.
What do you think, Guy?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was really interesting because just to hear Elon's perspective on like why they can't be certain on when it will launch, and just this whole misperception in the press of the accidents with autopilot get reported, even though it's a much safer technology than normal driving. And so I think that's going to be a huge hurdle to the adoption, is like this public perception and the reporting thing. And I believe something that came out of that was that Tesla is going to be releasing quarterly data on the safety of their system and stuff like that. So I just thought from that, like, kind of higher level perspective of like the self-driving car issue, like the real hurdles is less so the technology, but the public's perception. And that's why Tesla's uncertain on when they'll actually be able to bring that to market. So I just thought that was super fascinating to like hear their perspective of why they don't have a timeline.
You know, and this kind of goes back to just a general strategy thing. Like when you put in front of Elon, like, hey, your competitors are doing something. What's your answer? Like that's how you get Elon to spill the beans. And yeah, that also worked with the 350 kilowatt Porsche charger at the end. I was like, oh, you know, it's not like Elon's going to be like, oh, you know, we're not going to do anything, or we can't talk about it. He's like, you know.
Yeah, we talked about that, Gelly and I, before the podcast, like framing it as, are you going to be beat to market? That's the big thing.
Because you know Elon hates that. Like, the thought of like some other company beating them.
Yeah.
And it's not even just like a Elon thing too. I feel like it's, you know, as Tesla investors, like my big thesis is like Tesla's on the cutting edge of all this technology. So if they are on the cutting edge of charging speeds and, you know, autopilot, why are these other companies beating them? So I think that's, you know, just from like a simple consumer perspective, it's like, okay, Tesla's so good at autopilot, why is Waymo doing it first?
Yeah, that's what we got out of it, I think. And like you said, then he went on to talk about releasing quarterly data about the autopilot safety, which I think is going to be a big thing. But of course, it's going to get very scrutinized by the media, and a lot of people already don't like the way Tesla is presenting data. So I think that's going to be a big issue. But the big aspect to it, I think what I was most surprised by is that when he said that, he talked about attacked the media again of the Woody prison, the autopilot accident, and everything. And I mean, I got where he's coming from before that, but now I really understand why it gets to him so much, because they can actually link bad negative press coverage on autopilot directly to a dip in usage by their fleet. I mean, I didn't know that at all. Like that was really surprising to me.
Right, and theoretically, then, you know, if you follow the same path, then, you know, if autopilot is 40% safer and saves 40% of lives, then that bad press leads to less usage, which leads to more deaths, theoretically.
Yeah. So, now you get Bear why he's so aggressive against journalists that report this way the accident, but I think he should have done that after releasing solid data about the autopilot safety, because I think at this point a lot of people just don't believe in the data, and just that it's safer in big part because, of course, most people, when you hear about autopilot, they hear about the autopilot accidents. So of course you don't believe it. Just especially what happened this week, right after he said that, what came out is that Netsta, when they released a report on the original fatal Tesla accident from 2016, in the report, they mentioned that that's when it first came out that the AP1 was 40% safer than driving without the autopilot on. And the way it was framed in that report is that the data was confirmed by NHTSA, and it's apparently not the case anymore. They backtracked it on that, and they said, no, that's just Tesla's data. And
Do you think that's related to the recent skirmish with the other, the NTSB?
Yeah. I wouldn't think so, because the way I see it is that they are actually like competitive between the two. So okay. I wouldn't see them just trying to one up each other. But it's not impossible. But that's pretty much what we got from the autopilot side of the call. Of course, there was a few other interesting things that came out, especially Tesla Semi just got a big bump in range, apparently.
Yeah, 100 miles. Why not?
Yeah, people did. Yeah. And of course, that was another way that was really framed well for the question. So, again, it was like a competitive thing. It was, hey, Daimler think you cannot do it. So, oh yeah, you think we cannot do it? We can even do better than that.
I went to college and I learned physics.
I didn't get that from the call directly, but he said that he actually know the guy that said that. Dom, I think is his name.
Yeah, I think he was pretty upset about that whole situation.
Yeah. I wonder what Daimler guy's thinking now.
So, and you actually also framed the question about, does it require a battery breakthrough? So that's what you were trying to get from
I thought we got some great insight there, which is, it doesn't sound like there is just, and I'm actually wondering whether the biggest breakthrough is cost and maybe the details about the less cobalt in the battery, which they alluded to are really helping the cost, could be one of the major components that's allowing such a cheap battery for the Semi.
Right. So when we've talked about it, we've actually, I guess, got on that bandwagon where the physics doesn't make sense. But I think to us, the problem was that how do you get that many batteries in a truck for that much money? I think that was like, you're talking about a megawatt hour of batteries or something $250,000.
I read the transcript a few times after that to make sure. They didn't outright say that there's no breakthrough needed. They just said that if we use our current technology, we can make a 500 miles truck, doesn't say much, really. I mean, of course you can make a 500 mile truck. Like, everyone can make it. Just what's the load capacity of 500 miles and what's the cost of 500 miles? That's the big question at this point. So that's my biggest issue with it. So maybe there's a battery breakthrough behind the Tesla Semi. It's just that they don't actually need one to get a product out to market.
Yeah, I mean, but, and it might be just linear, like you guys were saying. It's could just be like in 2 years, that's how much batteries are going to cost and whatever.
So it's a cost thing. Like I wrote in the article about it, I said that even with $100 per kilowatt hours, which we don't think they're at right now, because that in itself would be like a cost breakthrough in terms of batteries. That would be like an $80,000 to $100,000 just for the pack inside that $180,000 truck. So maybe Tesla can deliver it on a $180,000 truck with just 50% of the cost being the pack. But that means that if that's true, then that means there's another breakthrough, which is a breakthrough in the actual cost of making a cab, like a tractor. And with their first truck, if they can make a breakthrough on that, I mean, congrats. But
I think that's unlikely.
Yeah, I know we get why people are skeptical about it. People are making trucks because they, of course, that's why we're moving the actual diesel engine, which is quite heavy too, quite expensive. But
yeah, and isn't it there the whole thing that these are a lot, the electric drivetrain and battery system is a lot simpler than the internal combustion engine, so maybe that is part of the reason why there's so many less costs, there's just less parts.
Yeah, that's a good point, because of course there hasn't been that much innovation in the truck. Well, there has been a few on the actual engine itself, like trucks have become more efficient over the years for sure, but in the actual design of a truck, of a tractor, it hasn't changed much, really. So if you rethink it altogether with a much smaller powertrain, like you said, with the electric motor being simpler, then maybe they found just a bunch of efficiency improvement and optimization that they can put into the design of the truck itself. And I mean, while we're on the subject of the Tesla Semi design, maybe we should mention the suit itself, and even though we're still on the call.
Oh yeah.
So wait, I didn't really get into it. So maybe we can back up a little bit. And so Nikola is the hydrogen powered competitor.
Battery hydrogen, they want.
Yeah.
They would want you to say.
Hybrid between battery and hydrogen. Although all hydrogen's vehicles have a battery. Yeah. Anyway, they're the major competitor. They were kind of announcing things before the Tesla Semi came out. And they say that Tesla, I mean, I don't even know how they know that Tesla's butting up against their patents unless they have a truck or something. Like, how do they even know?
Oh, Tesla knew about the truck, you mean?
No, how, I mean, there's Nikola suing them.
I think it was
just based on what they saw. It's based on the pictures and stuff, unless they were there at the unveiling, but I don't think so.
They patented like an electric truck or
Like, the patent, it's a design patent, so it's not like a functional patent. It's just about the way it looks, which is extremely difficult to enforce. And if you actually read the whole complaint, which I did, it's no lawyer that wrote this up thought that there was any chance of winning it. Like, it's a pure media play.
Publicity. Okay.
Yeah. And it was executed perfectly, apparently, because everything that I read online, all order media except from Electrek, and even people like Tesla Ready were just thought to be like pro Tesla because it's Tesla website. Everyone like wrote it up just as it was written in the complaint. Then the only argument against it was Tesla's comment on it, which was this was no merit to the suit, but no explanation why there would be no merit. Of course, Tesla cannot comment much on it because it's going to the court, but. As a reporter, you can comment on why it's ridiculous, which I did extensively in my post. If you guys want to check it out, but basically the problem is they obtained design patent on three specific things, and those three things are the actual shape of their fuselage of their truck, which they say is similar to the Tesla Semi. Okay, maybe it's a little bit similar, whatever. The second thing is the wrap windshield, so the windshield that go from the front end to the sides. And the third thing is a mid-section door, so the door is in the mid-section instead of being on the front of the truck, which already existed in prototypes before. They've been seen around both the wrap windshield and the mid-size door opening. They've been since the 70s. People have been making trucks. More recently, there was the MAN truck, a prototype back in 2010 before Nikola Motor even existed. They had a very similar prototype with the same wrap windshield, with the same mid-entry door. So there's really no basis for it. But my biggest issue with it is that I was just excited about Nikola Motors. I mean, for years, I was very critical of them, and I got so much shit for it. I mean, in the comment about, oh, you're just a Tesla chill that doesn't like hydrogen fuel cell and everything like that. I mean, okay, fair criticism and everything. But then they invited me to test the Nikola Zero, and I fell in love with that machine. That machine was just so much fun to play around with. And of course, the Nikola Zero, if you guys don't know, is the electric UTV. So that's a all electric vehicle. It's not hydrogen, so it's not like I changed my opinion much on the hydrogen fuel cell, but I changed my opinion on the company itself, because they did produce an amazing electric vehicle that's just so much fun and has a place in the market, actually. And then at that event, I talked with Trevor Milton, who is the CEO of the thing, and I became friendly with Trevor. The guy even used my Tesla referral code to buy a Tesla, and so he's not like a Tesla hater and everything. But he does do some shitty thing about on the social media and stuff like that, where he comments about Tesla that just makes no sense. And I tried to convince him to stop doing that because it doesn't make him look good. It makes him look ridiculous.
Yeah, it does not make him look good.
Yeah, you've seen the tweets. Why? It looks completely stupid. And so he invited me for an interview this week because they were announcing a big order that they got for the truck. So, okay, fine. But then the lawsuit happened, and when the lawsuit happened, that's just patent trolling. It's nonsense. You cannot do that. So I reached out back to him, and I said, I don't think that the electric audience would want to hear about a new order without a good explanation about fighting this stupid complaint. And so I said, oh, we can talk about that, and then we can talk about the order. But if we don't have a good explanation for that, I don't think I can write about the order. And he said, okay, that's it. Bye-bye.
So, wow.
So he said, oh, he was friendly. He said, good luck on your future endeavor and everything. But it looks like we're not going to be much friendly with Nikola Motor anymore, which is sad because, again, I love their UTV, their electric UTV, which is so great.
So about that order, they said up to 800. So did they actually like put any money down or?
Nope.
So
you can reserve up to 100 Nikola One right now on their website without putting any money, like yourself. You can just put an order for 100. That's it.
So theoretically they could have ordered like two and, you know, with an option to buy 700.
Yeah, it doesn't mean
anything more.
It doesn't mean anything. And of course, that was actually a great play again because it was Budweiser, whatever the company Budweiser, I cannot name.
Yeah, Anheuser-Busch.
Anheuser-Busch, thank you, Seth.
Bev.
And they of course, also reserved Tesla semi-trucks, and they reserved 40 of them. So the way they presented it to the media was, hey, this company ordered just 40 Tesla semi-trucks and 800 of ours. So it's we are beating Tesla and everything. So it's just always putting in the media, and just they're working an angle and everything like that. I mean, it's fine. You have to do what you have to do, but I think there's like a line you don't cross, and patent trolling is certainly one, especially if you call yourself Nikola and based on Nikola Tesla. And Nikola Tesla was, of course, extremely anti-patent. Well, not anti-patent, but anti-patent infringement suit. He famously talked about Marconi when he invented the radio. He was using a bunch of Nikola's patent. And he said, he's a great guy. Just let him use my patent. I don't care. And you name your company after that guy. And the first thing you do once you have a little bit of not even technology. I mean, it's just a design. It's just like, anyway, I'm getting worked up on this. I think we're going to have to move on.
So should we go back to Model 3 production? That's a fun
We didn't even talk about that. Right? I mean, it wasn't one of Gabby's questions.
About the call though, uh-huh. The last thing I thought was super interesting on the semi was platooning and him reiterating that that could disrupt the rail market. So, you know, I've just kind of been processing like, wow, like they don't have any marketing budget for the semi, like all of that incremental profit could go right to the bottom line. And if they are really, you know, actually can be as cheap as rail in many situations, like 100,000 trucks a year could be a low ball estimate of like what this, the potential of this in the long term. So, like, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on, like, whether they can pull platooning off. I think it's going to come way sooner than self-driving cars. So, I don't know. I just thought that was a cool – it gets me excited about the future of the semi.
Mm-hmm.
So, I – this is a common high-level complaint about Tesla, and, you know, maybe that's Elon Musk's view with other projects he's working on. He doesn't seem to enjoy train travel at all. Mass transit for him just does not work, you know, in any sense. I think you make an electric train. Like, I mean, there's
talking about freight though. You're talking about passenger train. It's not the same.
Yeah, but like, why not? I mean, you know, you put a bunch of batteries and like you get. I mean, there's chart like for instance around here. There's, you know, there's electricity and you can just charge the train just about anywhere. You know, even while it's going down the rail. I don't understand why you need to have platoons of trucks on freeways.
He did explain it during the call, though. He said because even with trains, you still need trucks because the trains are limited to the tracks. And then between them, so he's saying that you just replace the tracks by the road, basically. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, and platooning is basically like a train anyway, since it's just all these trucks in a row. You know, like essentially train cars, kind of.
The difference, though, is that you said it's going to come sooner than self-driving, but the big cost difference with platooning is going to be the potential of having maybe one driver instead of three or four or whatever.
Exactly, and yeah.
So I don't know if that really can come before self-driving. Maybe it can. Maybe there's going to be regulation that's going to say, oh, you can have just one truck per one driver per whatever number of truck on the highway or whatever. So it's not impossible, but I think it's still very closely linked to self-driving at this point.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Tesla network is supposed to debut about the same time as the trucks are coming out. You know, so you know you're going to have self driving in the car, but not yet on the truck. It seems kind of weird that you wouldn't, and it seems like you know trucks are a good place for self driving.
Don't say that. You're going to upset a lot of people if you try to say that Tesla Semi is not going to be operated by anyone. Like.
Well,
there's a lot of the truck driver that's been reserving the truck, and they don't want to hear that. But you made a good point, though. It's a possibility, but still, you still have the non-driving aspects of being a truck driver, which
right.
is operating the unloading, offloading, and other logistical operation that you need to do. So it's not like. Even if self-driving is there, you might still need the driver for some time. But I thought it was interesting what you said, like trying to estimate the demand for the Tesla Semi based on those comments, which said that it's going to go into the train market to. And you said maybe 100,000 is lowballing it. I mean, 100,000 trucks per year is lowballing it, even without the train aspect to it, if Tesla is right about their cost of operation. Because if their cost of operation are correct, then they could, if they can magically just increase the production to whatever number of trucks are being made per year, they would kill the whole market directly, because it's all about the cost of operation at this point. And if it's really 30% better than everybody else, everybody would just buy the Tesla Semi truck if there's really no competition at that price point, at that price of operation point at that time.
Right. I mean, the incumbents wouldn't be able to compete on price, yeah, because they would be spending too much money on diesel.
Tesla would make just would sell every truck that he can make if the price of operation is true. There's just no way around it. And then you can add the train aspect. So trying to actually some logistic buyers will look at trying to hire people, trying to drive a train freight company like CN or Pacific or whatever, and then instead decide to go with a truck company because they have a lower cost operation because they're using Tesla Semi truck. So that's just another aspect to it. So someone will want to have an even bigger fleet that they have now because the Tesla Semi just reduced the cost operation and they can just start stealing contracts from train companies.
Yeah. And I'm not sure about what you guys know about this, but for my research, there's about 300,000 Class 8 semi-trucks sold in North America each year is the data that I was looking at. So wow,
that's a lot.
That sounds a lot, yeah.
And that's just North America. So 100,000 is only assuming a third of this North America market. And I know they've already had orders globally for the semi. So, and like back to Tesla's financials, you know, everyone's like, why are they valued so highly? Like, I just feel like you're almost getting this free call option of Tesla freight, like this. The success of 100,000 semi trucks is like 15 to 20 billion in incremental revenue. They only did 12 billion all of last year. And so, you know, it just seems like these are the type of things that are going to get Tesla to that 100 billion plus market cap.
That's why you need to follow Galileo, man, guys. He's trying to open up a brand new revenue stream for Tesla that investors don't know about yet. So if you follow Galileo right now, you know about it, and you can take better investment decision from this. It's a good point. I mean, and another thing, so Seth, you linked it with the Tesla network coming out at the same time, and going back to Nikola Motors, one thing that I liked a lot about Nikola Motors when they first unveiled the Nikola One, their truck, they unveil at the same time sort of a Uber-like freight system. And I think it was actually before. That's why I'm referencing Nikola right now, because it was before Uber did the same thing. So Uber has a Uber freight right now. And I'm pretty sure it was pretty much copied from Nikola, or unless they were working on it before, I don't know. So if Nikola wants to sue someone, this is Uber freight, maybe. I don't know for sure, but the way I saw the timeline rolled out, I think Nikola had that before. So the way it works is that instead, it basically replaced a freight company. So you have independent truckers using trucks that you buy from Nikola in this case, but Tesla could do a very similar thing. And you just use a network that just match you with buyers that are buying freight. And you can, so you're always full, basically. You always have even because the most challenging thing if you're an independent truck driver is trying to get cargo when you go back from the whatever route you're doing, and that's why you're trying to use different I don't know the name in English, but there are people that arrange that for the sort of a freight buyers that arrange that with multiple companies at the same time. You employ those guys to get you a cargo at your destination so you can bring back, so you're always full, so you don't lose too much money. And a Uber-like platform is basically that. And I think they could do that with the Tesla network type of system.
Yeah, I mean, Uber's whole model is kind of vulnerable here. I mean, even Uber Eats, you know, with the Tesla network could kind of get in there. I wonder if Uber investors are kind of afraid of what Tesla could offer.
I think they should be. I mean, I think short term they should be more concerned about Waymo at this point, but and especially if you look at the way that the whole Uber self-driving program pretty much crumbled after the accident, and they had to stop it for a while, and they don't seem to have that much of a technology at this point. So you need the technology advantage, I think. And technology advantage right now, you really see Waymo as having the technology advantage. And I think Tesla is like going under the radar because they are very much vision-based, machine learning-based, and data-driven.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Uber's always been, its end game has always been autonomy. Like, it's kind of like Netflix. You know, Netflix wasn't ever, like, the idea of Netflix was never to send DVDs to your mailbox. Like, that was never the business plan. It was kind of like the get-in-the-door plan. And then, you know, once everybody started getting comfortable with Netflix and had an account, then, oh, here's a, you know, a service for $10 a month or whatever. I feel like that's kind of Uber's game, is like, we got these human meat sacks driving these cars around right now. But like in a couple of years, it's all going to be us, you know, with our electronics.
But so, it's Tesla's game too, because that's the first thing that Elon said when Gally asked the question. He said, I don't remember, I'm paraphrasing, I don't remember exactly, but he said, the end goal is a shared electric self-driving fleet. So that's the end goal of Tesla too. Like it's everybody's end goal at this point.
Yeah.
And an interesting tidbit is, I remember reading like Travis Kalanick, when he was CEO of Uber, made some comment at some dinner that he said he would buy 500,000 Model 3s from Tesla and operate them as like robot taxis. And this was right before Master Plan Part 2. And I don't know if this was the catalyst for Elon designing the Tesla network or not. But then basically that's like right after that, Tesla announced like Tesla network, and you specifically can't use our cars for ride sharing services. And so I think it's really interesting to note that Tesla is basically seeing like, well, we make the hardware, we should just do the software service on top of it, because all these companies like Uber and Lyft and even Waymo, like they don't make the hardware. And that's sort of a huge Achilles heel. Like, I think Waymo would love to buy 1,000,000 Model 3s and operate them instead of the I-Pace, but like Tesla just won't let them. So I don't know. I'm kind of curious what you guys think about like that closed ecosystem approach versus Tesla just being like, let's just sell 500,000 of these to Uber and let them operate it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you look around, Chevy and Cruise, like they've got that idea too. Like they want to have the whole situation. You know, Google, I think they want to be like Android, where they make the software and the big margins, and these, you know, schmucks build the, you know, the electric,
they'll build the car,
build the cars. And, you know, I think it's probably going to wind up something like, you know, Apple and Google. I think Waymo's got some really good technology. You know, I don't know who the autonomous industry is going to shake out in a big way. There's going to be a lot of people who are falling off. My feeling is that Google is going to be one of the top, and Waymo is going to be one of the top vendors. And, you know, obviously Tesla is probably going to be one of the top. And then I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of Nokias and Blackberries out there who...
Aurora, the Sterling Anderson.
Yeah, yeah.
Company. Yeah. And they want to be like Waymo too. So in your analogies, would be like an Android. They want to be the Android, like you said. And they had a few deals already with VW, Hyundai.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out. I know he's quite a smart guy, and he's got a really like impressive group of people there. But I don't know if they have Google type money to throw at this kind of thing. And you know, Apple's also involved, so.
Yeah, we don't hear much from them though on that front.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to pan out for them. I know they've scaled their ambitions back a little bit in the car realm. So it'll be like we're watching history right now. Like there's, you know, 20 players trying to get
50 maybe.
Yeah, I mean, but 20 real ones, you know, that have a shot, and it's going to come down to two or three winners.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense that there's going to be many winners, right? Because whoever is the safest, people have to go with. Like,
I mean, if it's 10% safer, that's, you know, it, and then 1 million people die, that's 100,000 lives lost, you know, 10% safer.
So it's not impossible that it could be just only one winner, right? Can we agree?
Is it possible? I feel like government wouldn't like that result.
Yeah.
yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, maybe it's like, again, like Apple and Android, like maybe there's a, you know, vertical like Tesla where they own the car and the software and the hardware. And there's Google or Waymo or Sterling's company or whoever that make the software for all the, you know, the other companies that make vehicles.
Yeah. So what else are we going to call about the call? Oh, yeah. We can talk about charging. So we got finally, thanks to Gally again, we got an update on the Supercharger V3, albeit a vague one. Like, we know, it's not like we have a timeline or anything, but we did get an actual number on the somewhat upcoming Supercharger update, which would be instead up to 200 to 250 kilowatts. And Elon's and GB weren't very convinced about the possibility of a good 250, of a usable 250 that comes with quite significant drawback for the cost of the consumer. That was interesting, I think, in one of
And I guess, like, to add to that, they said without increasing the battery pack to be huge, you know, like, I'm not saying like Tesla semi huge, which I think they're talking about a gigawatt or a megawatt charger. I think, you know, like the Roadster, for instance, that's 200 kilowatt hour, the new Roadster.
That's considered big, right? You'd say that's what he was talking about, right?
Right. So, you know, if you get to that point, maybe the 350 kilowatts makes sense, or the 250 kilowatts makes sense. But until that point...
No, that's not how I got it, though. Like, I think when he said 250, he means like for... Because he has been talking about like limiting to about 125. That's not the first time he's talking. I'm talking kilowatt hours now, a battery pack. There's been talk about like 125 kilowatt hours being a good size for a pack that they don't think they're going to go more than that.
Right.
Unless there's a big breakthrough in the energy density and you can just make a 200 kilowatt hour pack that weighs less than 1,000 pounds. But I mean, we don't see that on the roadmap yet, unless you're talking about maybe solid states and stuff like that. But that's... that could be still a decade away. So the way, and correct me if you heard it differently than me, the way I said it is that for their current architecture with the current battery, without a battery breakthrough, they could like go to 125 kilowatt hours. So that'd be like the current size of a normal pack for a passenger car. And then on that, so between 50, like the smaller Model 3 is 50, and they go up to 125. 200 kilowatts to 250 would be the best kind of the best charge rate for those cars.
So how fast would so that's basically double of current, right? So yeah. 125 is current.
120.
So double. So in 20 minutes you would have what, like 200? I mean, it would be
you get 400 kilometers right now at peak rate.
Right.
Per hours. So, you'd get, you get almost, 1,000 kilometers, which is 600 miles.
So you would get 400 miles at, in a half hour, or 200 miles in 15 minutes.
Yeah. About that.
So 200 miles in 15 minutes is what you would get.
Seems which is reasonable. Sounds just fine. So he has a point that you don't really need. I mean, I've never been to a supercharger where I just want to leave right now. And I'm capped at 90, by the way, with my old Model S. I'm capped at 90 kilowatts. And I've never been to a supercharger and said, I just want to go right now. If I'm at a supercharger, I'm always like supposed to do something. So whether it's eat or just go take a piss for a while. So it's just not... It's really just a big difference if you're doing a multiple leg a trip, like when you go down to when you went down to Florida, that would have been a big difference, because you would have cut your trip by, I don't know, like hours at this point, right?
Yeah, that would have been cool. I just, you know, there's also the health benefits, like you're not supposed to drive 6 hours at a time, you know, should take time off. And like, you know, we have kids, like they need to go to the bathroom every few hours. Mm-hmm. So, like, realistically, like the 200 miles in 15 minutes would probably be just fine.
The other takeaway I think that was interesting is that since they like throw some cold water on Porsche, even making it with a usable system. So that's going to be interesting to see, because we don't have any details about Porsche technology at this point. Like, Have they even confirmed the battery pack size of the Mission E? I'm not even sure they have.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, I don't even sure they have. So they're just saying that they have a 350 kilowatt technology on 800 volt for charging. And they did confirm the range of the Mission E, though. So we think that the range is going to be about 250. So if it's 250, the energy capacity of the pack cannot be that big. I mean, it has to be a...
Certainly under 100 kilowatt hours.
Yeah, so it has to be like 90 kilowatt hours. So maybe 100 if like... Maybe like they did a very hard cycle on it. And it ends up to 250 miles. Well, they said 300 miles, but we know what that means. They said that back when they were using the NEDC cycle, right, which doesn't mean anything. So if they really did a 350 system on a pack that size, then they have something that Tesla doesn't have.
Right.
That's the interesting part.
I wonder, we talk about solid state. I wonder if there's like a room for a solid state / battery hybrid where, you know, you get that initial charge really quick and then it kind of just trickles out to the battery and trickles out to the motor at the same time. I wonder if like they've got something like that going on.
There's no way to have solid states in the car. It's just absolutely impossible because it's coming out next year. I mean, they're supposed to start production next year.
I think Fisker's got solid state coming out next year too.
Fisker can put you in the moon next year, see if they want. So they can, right, do whatever they want. Yeah, no, I thought it was an interesting, because the question was great because they got them talking on a bunch of interesting that we didn't know about. So that was awesome. What else?
I have one of my things that I feel like nobody's talked about from the call that was the biggest thing for me was the him hinting at a gigawatt hour project scope for Tesla
energy. Oh, you're right. Yeah. I forgot to even, I was supposed to write an article about that. I wrote everything for the call that I wanted to make a specific article about, and I forgot this one. I'm going to have to do it tomorrow.
Video about it. I might beat you to it. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Perfect. So yeah, what did he say exactly? So we talked about Tesla energy at that point. What was the question?
Just trying to figure out with the South Australian battery project be complete. Yeah. Such a positive reaction, like has that triggered an inflection point in them seeing bigger orders for the grid scale projects? And he basically hinted that said in a couple months we want to hope to announce a gigawatt hour project.
Was it a couple of months? I felt like it was even like sooner than that.
Yeah, it sounded like pretty near term,
like days.
By my calculations, the Australia project looked like it could have been 50 to 100 million in revenue alone, 129 megawatt hours. The same price, even a little decrease in price, like we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars for that project alone, and just probably by far the world's largest battery if that actually happens. So that's like, to me, huge news as just a sustainability advocate. And also, you know,
and you said gigawatt, right? Not gigawatt hour.
Is that,
no, he said gigawatt hour. I thought
gigawatt hour, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, that makes a big difference here. Because yeah,
I mean, I would love for you to explain like why, what's the difference there and why.
Well, the big thing about the Australian project was not that it was 129 kilowatt megawatt hour. It was 100 megawatt period. So it had the capacity to just unload 100 megawatt like in milliseconds. Mm-hmm. And we have never seen a project like that before because people in the comment right now are saying gigawatt hour. So they probably checked the transcript and so they should be right.
Okay.
So gigawatt hour, everyone we're talking about. So coming back to it, but it's still an interesting one. So gigawatt hour makes more sense because it could be like something like a 200. Even then, it's like a dual record because it's a record in terms of energy capacity and a record in terms of power capacity. Because it probably is going to be a 250 megawatt power system that can generate power for 4 hours on that capacity, and. Yeah, because before it was always like that. It was always like 4 times the energy capacity of the power that you have. And the Australian project was almost 1-to-1, basically. Not 1-to-1, but a little bit less than 1-to-1. But
I mean, I think the use case was that they, you know, that Australia was like, you know, they would have like, you know, these 20-minute periods where they'd have to like fire up these peaker plants and they didn't come up quick enough. So they'd have these like brownouts blackouts, really. And then, you know, you come along with the battery that within milliseconds, not even a second, like within a couple seconds of the power coming off, going offline, you know, say a power plant, you know, one of the reactors, I don't even know, it's probably like oil, but say it's a nuclear power plant and one of the reactors, just goes down for whatever reason.
Normally it's bad.
When a reactor goes down, it's not good. But generally speaking, if for whatever reason the power goes down, or maybe, you know, usage goes up, maybe the sun comes out and it's really hot that day. These things come on like right away, like immediately. Whereas the peaker plants, you got to like push a couple buttons, wait for the boilers to fire up. And it's a totally different thing.
Yeah. That for sure, but even 1 gigawatt, I mean, there's places that have in the same region a need for a gigawatt of power capacity if something goes down. I mean, I'm sure there is, but either way, it's impressive
So you're saying in the worst case scenario, a 1 gigawatt hour project would be 250 megawatts
of power, so it could go for 4 hours.
Yeah,
and that would still be 2.5 times the size of the Australia project, though.
No, that's eight times.
No, two and a half times the power capacity. Yeah, and 6 times the.
So I mean, even in that scenario, I think that's easily like 150, 200 million in revenue project.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the way to look at it. If you're looking at it in a financial standpoint, you cannot compare the Australian project with just any other project on an energy capacity base, because the big difference with that project was focus on power and not energy capacity. That's why a lot of people misreported it as the biggest battery on Earth, and like it's not the biggest. Normally people like focus on the energy capacity of it, but it's the most powerful battery on Earth. That was the battery system, if you will, because the power output was the impressive thing. But I'm especially excited about knowing where it's gonna be. Like, I feel like it's gonna be Australia again, because it's more valuable there. It just is. But maybe we could get a surprise and it's in our backyard or something.
Yeah, and I think the even bigger news story is like, this isn't gonna be one more big project that they're doing. I think the norm is gonna be those new gigawatt hour scale projects potentially. And like, we're seeing the long-term vision of Tesla Energy really disrupting the whole utility space. Like, that thesis is playing out. And that's the biggest takeaway for me is like, this isn't just an energy or a car company anymore. This is a company that's fundamentally transforming the energy industry. That's not a theory anymore. We're watching them do it.
Right. I mean, Tesla's become two or three companies. They're obviously in the solar game, and they're obviously in the transportation and car game. But now this is another huge revenue maker, and like, we're just at the very beginning of it. You know, it's like the potential is like, you know, every country on Earth, every power company on Earth needs a big battery. I mean, clearly, especially with more green power coming online, more, you know,
solar
shift of power to the night. It's just, you know, the potential is crazy.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that Elon called it too when he first announced the Tesla Energy. Like, he said that was coming to the. He said that's scalable to 1 gigawatt hour of a project, and most people, of course, didn't believe him. And if it was going to happen, people was going to think it's going to be years and years away. So now, if from 2015 to, let's say, the project start in 2018, in just those 3 years. You come from people just not having energy storage at all. Like, the only project that you see at that point were just like do it yourself kind of things. But and now you have actual energy storage system that can change a whole grid operator's business entirely. So that's the interesting part. But what I would link it to, so when we talked before you went on the call, I was trying to make it for a way that question would link into the actual production capacity of the Gigafactory 1, because if they locked in a project of 1 gigawatt hour right now for power, I assume it's going to be power packs. I mean, what's the energy? What's the production capacity of that damn plant? I mean, they said now that they have a production capacity of 3,000 a week for battery packs for the Model 3. What? So what's that? I didn't even try to.
3,000 times 50, I guess. Or no, 75. No,
75 right now. 75 times 3,000. So that's 225 megawatt hour. per week.
So at least four.
So that's 11 gigawatt hour. Is that right? That has to be right.
Anyway, quite a bit of
usage. But then, so that's just the Model 3, and they're already doing the other Powerpack project. They're already doing the Powerwall, which are, of course there was some interesting comment about the Powerwall too during the call. That they were going to try to focus more on it. So I'm not sure they're going to focus on that if they have a 1 gigawatt hour project in the work. And so we didn't get a clear update on the production capacity at Gigafactory Round aside from the Model 3 battery pack. But the other thing I want to link it to is coming back to the Tesla Semi and the Mega Charger. I don't remember if that was your question. I think it was your question too that the answer came out of. And I was weirded out at first by the response because you basically ask how they're going to deliver on that fixed price energy electricity rate that they were promising. And JB's first answer was, we don't know.
He was like, we
haven't finalized those plans. So I was like, what? You guys promise 7 cents per kilowatt hours to those customers and you don't know how you're going to deliver it? Then he clarified it and everything, but... I think that was weird that you have to have
clear. That was some short fodder.
Yeah. You have to have some clear plans to be able to deliver on that because that's a big part of the Tesla Semi strategy is to have cheap electricity to charge those trucks. That changes everything. And of course, we already assumed that it was going to be based on having your own energy production and energy storage at those mega charger station or whatever they're going to deliver the electricity to those trucks. So I'm thinking if they have like a specific route that they're working on right now, because they already know who their customers are. So you have the Walmart and the Walmart order trucks.
Yep.
Yeah, they did. Walmart, UPS, FedEx. So you have the big ones. So you ask them where you're going to use those trucks and they already plan the route. So they know where they're going to be the routes that they're going to need the mega charger and everything. And I wouldn't be surprised that they find a good place to put the mega charger. And then that's where you're going to get those just big installation for a massive battery system. And maybe even also like an industrial size solar array. What do you guys think? Possibility? Maybe not. I'm dreaming.
I think they can't build them fast enough, really. Like, it feels like it's about to just, a switch is about to happen and they're just going to, I mean, I'm a little biased because I just want my Powerwall already. So I don't know. What do you think, Gally?
I mean, it sounds like a ton of money to build out each one of these mega charger stations if they're energy independent. And I know they've sort of been promising like these similar type of systems for the normal superchargers, and they've been super slow on that as well. So I'm sort of just like kind of a skeptic until I see that happen. I don't know.
I mean, I think it has to happen if they want to deliver at 7 cents per kilowatts per kilowatt hours.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm wondering is Elon's comments about the moat for the supercharger. You know, that was a really interesting insight into like how Elon thinks, because that's been a big part of my investment thesis. Like, at least with the cars, the supercharger, that's a reason. Then with these electric trucks, like if someone's going to try and compete on the electric truck, Tesla has the best solar panels that are theirs. They have the best battery that are theirs proprietarily. They build out this mega charger infrastructure. Like, why are they so willing to just let anybody use it? Or I didn't say that they would for the mega charger, but for the supercharger, they would. So I'm just like curious why they don't think that this is like an edge worth keeping.
I don't know if Tesla's really going to let anybody use the supercharger. I feel like, you know, it was just something nice to say, but I don't think.
But I think it's a plug. Like, they can say that and no one's going to take out the offer because everybody's going with the CCS and that's it. Tesla is sticking with their plug right now. And they say that they are more with CCS and they've been even talking about a possible adapter, but other than that, like, people just don't, other automakers, they don't want to, they already think that charging is a big cumbersome activity that consumers just don't want to get into, so they don't want to add a plug on an adapter on top of the plug, which you have to at this point if you want to go into the supercharger, or you have to license Tesla's proprietary plug. And that's all weird business too, like the way that they license plugs. And not, I mean, not Tesla has never done it yet, so we don't know. But they already been weird about their plug Tesla. I mean, if we see the people that are making their own adapters and stuff like that, they haven't been really accommodating to those people though, the way I've heard. So, but to your point, to the way that you responded to that, and about just focusing on the pace of innovation, I mean, I do also think that's a big difference with Tesla, and especially when it comes to the Tesla Semi, because everybody I've been talking to that knows trucks and that are building trucks and even electric trucks. So I'm talking, I'm referring to like Trevor Milton from the Nikola Motors and other people. I've just been to a company here in Quebec who are working on electric trucks, and no one just believes them when they say anything. So they know like all the way they are building trucks, which is the way they have been, always been building trucks, and now they're trying to electrify that. And there seems to be something that they don't get that Tesla got with the Tesla Semi.
And like, I think to me, it's sort of finally clicking. I think it's the cobalt thing. I think that's the cost. That's the major cost reduction. That is why no one else gets it, because they haven't designed their batteries with that. They have exposure to the cobalt price, and that's why they can't make it work under their budget. But, and that's why Tesla mentioned it in the call. I don't know. It's,
I cannot get on board with that, unfortunately. That's the cobalt is expensive per kilograms. If you actually look at the price, it doubled and almost tripled, I think, in the last 2 years, doubled in the last years or the last 6 months, even maybe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it looks like it's a lot, but even like in the model, like pre Model 3, like if you look at the Model S battery pack, I think it's like 9 kilograms inside an average Model S battery pack. So it's just not that big of a difference over the whole cost of the pack, the whole cost of the car. It makes a little difference. I mean, I don't have the price of them.
JD mentioned that was a big reason they could drive the cost of batteries down, and that's just why I was thinking that.
I'm not sure that was really what he was aiming for. I mean, it's cobalt is just controversial, period. And I think they want to get out there that they are not using that much cobalt, and they're trying to reduce that.
Yeah, I mean, cobalt is like, you know, that's like the one thing in the batteries that like comes from kids and mines in Africa, and
can come from kids and mines in Africa.
You know, that it's just, you know, it goes into the market. It's a commodity. So like, it, you know, there's just it's like oil. Like, do you want oil that comes out of Iran? Well, there's just oil on the market. It's everywhere.
Exactly. So he's not lying. I mean, it does reduce the price to a certain degree, but I don't think it's like that big a difference. When I was talking about the trucks, I meant more about the design of the truck itself, like the drag coefficient of the truck. Like they don't even get like how Tesla can produce a truck at that price with that kind of fuselage that is just that aerodynamic. The air intake that they have, like they don't get it. They don't see how it's possible. And I mean, I'm not, I don't have enough knowledge in it to just call them out on it and say, yeah, it's wrong. But I mean, I've never known Tesla to lie about their performance capacity on their vehicle either. So, I mean, I think they're going to deliver on it. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's really a big revolution in the industry at this point, because especially if people just don't believe them and it's out there, it's driving around and everything. So
I mean, every Boeing and Lockheed Martin said that reusable rockets were impossible until Tesla did it, you know? So I feel like those are a lot more sophisticated companies than the trucking companies saying that the physics are wrong, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely room to improve. I mean, nobody's perfect, and truck makers are certainly not perfect. I mean, at this point, I really have an hour in. I mean, I saw a comment. This, you were supposed to talk about the Model 3 an hour ago. Yeah, the Model 3. I mean, we don't have that much to say. It was, especially after the letter that we leaked 2 weeks ago that already did a pretty good update on the production, that it was like 3 weeks. 3 weeks that they get over 2,000 a week, which was good. What the big thing, I think, in the letter that they said is going to have a total of 10 days of downtime during the second quarter. So that's what they're aiming for. And they already had 5 days, I think. So it's going to be another 5 days in the next 2 months. So it's not going to be a big impact on the actual output in Q2. There's going to be a big output for the Model 2. But the focus is, of course, on the exit rate, which is still apparently going to be 5,000 a week. So there wasn't a big update on that, just trying to reinforce the fact that they see a potential to hit that number, which I mean, even though they always miss, I think they did a good job to increasing our confidence, the investor confidence at this point. I mean, we can all agree on that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big thing this week. And of course, he did some details about what they did to improve that. That was just more comical than anything. I mean, I'm talking about the fluffer boat here and all that stuff. It was just, you need to listen to the call. It's something that you had to be there. But I'm just want to make sure that we get through everything. So
we didn't really talk much about the autopilot to settlement.
Yeah. We need to get to that. But still, the last thing I want to say about the call is the actual fallback from it after that, what happened. Because the actual earnings, people seem okay with it. If you look at the after hours, it was up like 1%, everything. Everything went down on the call itself after he said he went to Galileo instead of the analyst. Then it started crashing, and the next day it dropped like over 5%. So most of it was so. I mean, Galileo, you're probably more well positioned to comment on that. But
we should know real quick that it came back up today, so it's like back up to 2.9.
Yeah, it went back up after that. So the way I saw it, it was like Tesla just shake off some investor that was just weren't that a long term investor. And they were just focused more on what the analysts had to say on the stock. And since they see like a wedge being driven between the analysts and Tesla, they got spooked by the call and they dropped them off. Well, how do you see it? How do you explain the drop?
Yeah, I mean, the drop's interesting. I think he really pissed off Wall Street, or like Wall Street took this personally. Like Adam Jonas in his note really criticized it. And I think it's because he's personally like they're just insulted, and like, it was really unconventional and frankly like disruptive to what conference calls are. So I think the market just didn't know how to handle it. People were freaking out like, oh my God, he's going off the rails. And the stock immediately went to the 280s, which is where it opened. And the ironic part to me is like the questions had no impact. This is before the questions hit. This is before anybody thought about the questions that I asked. As you said, this wasn't related to the numbers for the quarter. So this really had, you know, it's almost hard to pinpoint any sort of like correlation to the numbers Tesla reported or to the questions answered on the call. It was just like so unconventional that the market freaked out. That is what it is. I think it's just a short-term blip.
Yeah, well, it was confirmed pretty much today that it was. And so it already back up without any news, really. Like nothing really big came out today. It was a weird one. And of course, Elon went on a little tweet storm this morning trying to explain the situation, trying to calm everybody down. And the takeaway from the GSM is like you're trying to explain like more specifically why he cut those two analysts off before going to Galley. I mean, his explanation, I think we're fine in terms of like not liking the actual question, but I think he tried to put some intention behind those analysts that I don't think was right.
I think he was right, because like on the configuration question, like they were trying to pinpoint that the rate of people wanting to configure their cars was super low. But that is, we know that that's exacerbated because they don't have the all-wheel drive and all of these versions of the Model 3. So of course the configuration rate is skewed. And so they were just sort of like cornering Tesla to get that number that they know is skewed. So then they can,
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the intention behind it, because if you actually look at the first guy from Bernstein, that's the guy that put out the original note about that. That was, like you said, that was misleading that note. That's for sure. But his question wasn't really about that. It was more about the CapEx. And this guy himself, like he said that he was trying to feed into the short thesis. I mean, and that note for sure did feed into that. But Bernstein himself, like he has a whole rating on the stock. He's not especially bearish on it. It's certainly not a bull. But I mean, I don't think that he had bad intention from it. Then you go to SPAC. So the question from the RBC Capital guy. You're right that he was trying to get that number and he was never going to get it. But I think he might have just been trying to get the clarification because the note came out during the quarter and he wanted to know it. Maybe he just didn't know how to interpret it, and he wanted an answer on it, because Elon could have said just what you just said, and it would have been fine too. And he said that after this morning on Twitter, he said that he should have answered the question instead and clarified the situation. So it was a misstep, I think. He shouldn't have been so short. I think you should have still like taken 20 questions from you, but that made a better call for sure. But you should have just ended the question instead of cutting them off, and it was just we'd have avoided a bunch of drama.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we learned more in 20 minutes of your questioning than we learned in every single Tesla earnings call combined.
Certainly, like the last three or four combined for sure. Now, finally, we're going to talk a little bit about this settlements thing, because that was actually the biggest article of the week. It wasn't even the earnings one. Sorry. So that was an exclusive that we got because that originated from a class action lawsuit filed by some Autopilot 2.0 owners back in were already pretty upset by the delays in 2017. And now, a year later, we still have some serious delays about Autopilot 2.0. So you can try to get an idea of just how frustrated those owners are at this point. But they took a settlement for Tesla over those delays. And there's a few interesting things about that. So one of the class representatives ended up sending us the agreement that Tesla, the settlement agreement that Tesla negotiated with their lawyers. I mean,
thanks for that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
If you're listening.
Yeah, not going to say his name because he didn't want to, but thank you for sending that. So just a little background, because of all class action lawsuit work, is that you have, it's normally initiated really by a law firm that specializes in that. And the law firm then recruits class representative who are directly affected by the issue. So in this case, Tesla owners with Autopilot 2.0, and especially Tesla owners with Autopilot 2.0 cars that bought the enhanced Autopilot package and the self-driving package. So then they make their claim. So they posted a claim to the court. And then they just end up negotiating with the company in question in two installments, so it doesn't go to trial. And that's what we got here. We got the settlement negotiated between the lawyers and Tesla, and that settlement was then presented to the four or five class representative, who then they put their comments on it, and those, so they don't say, they say yes or no, but they don't, it doesn't head there. Then it goes to the court, and no matter what, the court decide with if it's fair or not, if it's legal or not. And pretty interesting settlement. I mean, we're talking about a $5,000 to $8,000 package with the enhanced autopilot and self-driving. And Tesla is offering $20 to $280 for depending on when you purchase your car. So if you purchase it way back in October 2016 when the Autopilot 20 was first announced, or if you purchased it back to September 2017, I'm not exactly sure how they determined that, but in the suit, it said that was based on the actual release of the system. So maybe like Tesla considered that back at that point in September 2017, they had a parity or however you want to call it. But of course, if you ask, you can ask on every owner and you're going to get a different answer if Autopilot reached parity with if Autopilot 2.0 reached parity with Autopilot 2.1. I know that set, well, just until recently, you agreed to parity that with your Model X.
Well, I didn't have a lot of experience with Autopilot 1, so yeah. It's hard to tell, but it's gotten much better. And as we discussed, I think, when we were talking about this situation, it almost feels like Tesla's giving out a interest payment on your deposit because, you know, you gave Tesla this big amount of money for something that's coming in the future. But it's not coming when they kind of said it was coming. It came, you know, a year later or more than that. So they're kind of giving you a little bit of money as interest on kind of holding your money for a product that didn't come out when it was supposed to come out.
Yeah, that's the best way to look at it.
Yeah,
if you accept the settlement, basically, that's the way you have to justify accepting the settlement, I think. But So some of the most interesting part of it is, so Tesla is not going to trial, so they don't have to release all their information about what happened with the transition between Autopilot 2.0, the first generation Autopilot, and the second one. And because the issue that came out of the class action lawsuit is that the way that they presented it is that they thought that Tesla was actually defrauding the customer because they knew that they couldn't deliver on those features in time. So that was the main claim made in that lawsuit, which Tesla, of course, denied. And we know that there was some, I mean, today, if we look back and inside, there's some validity to that claim because it was just so late. I mean, they couldn't have really been that wrong about rolling out those features. But there's just no evidence that Tesla actually knew and everything. And most likely, it's just Elon Musk said, oh, you can do it
right
in 3 months.
I mean, that's everything though, right?
Because yeah, that's what
it is. All Elon companies, it's like, this is the, you know, the very most optimistic glass half full outlook. We can probably, if everything goes right, get it done in 3 months. But reality is like, it's going to be a year or so.
Yeah. But so the way that the settlement works is that Tesla denies all those claims. They say that they really miss those deadlines. So they still give money back, but they give money just on the basis that they agree that they were late. So it's worth giving back some of the money. And so what happens next is the question. What happens next is that, so the settlement is not concrete yet. What we heard from our sources is that every one of the class representatives accepted the settlement, but in one case it was begrudgingly, they didn't want to. But the way that's what's crazy stupid. That's why I hate this. I hate the settlement, and I hate the. Just the way that the American society just always wants to go to court all the time. It's just, it bothers me. Partly because I was subject to that myself at one point. I was on the wrong end on the quick trigger of an American to go to court. But Celine, yeah. Anyway, you can look it up. What happens here is that it could have been indulged completely differently, because now they are accepting that, but that's $5 million. So if you add up all the money Tesla thing in the U.S., I'm talking the U.S., they're going to probably expand that to all the owners around the world, because why not at this point? They also have been waiting the same period. So that's $5 million just for the U.S. And out of that $5 million, $1 million is going to the lawyers. So that's just money that's not going back to the owners. And part of that is also going to the class representative. So the class representative also get a separate fee. So they are encouraged to settle the lawsuit, so to give like the okay to the court to go ahead with it, because they're gonna get more money. So they're gonna the one that's gonna get ahead of it instead of just the owner getting $200 to $220. So even if one of the particular class representative didn't like the settlement, he went ahead and accepted it, because not accepting it would be just going back to court and hiring his own lawyer, is not the class action lawyer that are leading the lawsuit, because the class action lawyer that leading the lawsuit just don't want anything to do with going to court. They already have their settlement. They're getting the $1 million and that's it. So it's just the winners here are not Tesla, are not the Tesla owners. They are the lawyers and the class representatives. So that's what's worrying me. I think a better resolution to this would have simply been that Tesla offers to every owners that are not happy with the way Autopilot has been rolled out to just, we're going to buy back the feature from you, the full money. We're going to give you back the full money. And then whenever you feel like Autopilot is worth the money, we're going to load it back to your car without that $1,000 fee for over the air that Tesla charge after, because that's the way it works. Like you pay $5,000 if you buy it at the purchase, or $6,000 if you buy it over the year after. So you just, so basically you're not losing much if you're Tesla, because you're just losing having to hold on to that money for a period of time. So maybe like once they offer that, they would have to give back a significant amount. But if they are confident in their ability to deliver on Autopilot, then they would technically get all that money back at some point. They just don't hold on to it for whatever how many months we're going to get that significant Autopilot update. And but that didn't happen. Right now it's going to court. The judge is going to decide if it's going forward with the settlement as is, or if they're still negotiating from there. But if the class representative are happy with it, the court is more likely than not to accept settlement. It's just going to be that. Then what's going to happen for the rest of the owners is that they're still going to set up a website to make your claim. So you can opt in or decide not to opt in, because if you opt in, then you cannot sue Tesla ever again on that particular issue. So if they never deliver on autopilot, then you don't have any recourse. Or, well, maybe not if you never deliver, but if you're still not happy with the rollout for whatever reason. So you can still decide to opt in or not. And I mean, the decision is not, unless you really need that $20 or whatever. I mean, I think most people is not gonna care too much. And the last interesting part about that is within that settlement, though, Tesla still add like a non-monetary benefit to it, which is to reiterate the fact that they are going to roll out those features. So you say, hey, we didn't forget about you. We're still going to do those features. It's still going to happen. And we also, the other thing part is that we're only talking about enhanced autopilot features. So the self-driving package is not part of that settlement at all, because Tesla was actually better. They had better language about it, and which goes back to what Elon said during the call about the rollout of the fully self-driving within the end of next year, is that the way that they presented it to the customer was, it's only going to happen when there's regulatory approval for it. So by saying that, and there's technically not regulatory approval, at least not everywhere, even though there's some places that technically you have, right? I mean, you right now in Arizona, if you have a system that's approved, you can just roll it out. I think the same thing in Michigan too. California too, since last month. So I'm not 100% sure the way that they justify that, but that's how they justified it, and that's how they're saying they justified it. So it's not part of it. It's just for people with enhanced autopilot features. But of course, if you have fully self driving, then you have enhanced autopilot, because the features goes together, but not the other way around. So yeah, that's pretty much it, I think, for the settlement. Unless you guys had some comments on it, we're okay with that.
I think so. I think you covered everything.
Yeah.
Just hope they don't overpromise again. That's about it.
Yeah.
Lesson from this.
Yeah, and hopefully they will roll out those other features too. I mean, it's basically on-ramp and off-ramp and smart summon, because technically they say that they are already rolling out Auto Steer Plus. Because there's really three main features inside that tenant sort of a package. And Auto Steer Plus, the way that they describe it, is just that an auto steer that can sort of handle more difficult routes and everything. And technically they can, because Autopilot 2.0, if you activate it right now, you can more easily navigate in like a side street than the highway, which is more focused for Autopilot 1.0. So, I mean, it's you really have to it's not an easy like comparison to do, like which one is better at what and everything, but for sure on ramp and off ramp and smart summon are just not in Autopilot 2.0 right now, so that needs to be rolled out. And they reiterated it in the settlement, but without a solid timeline, so we're just gonna follow it closely, see when the new update. And though they did say, because so Tesla sent me an actual comment on the report, so they didn't want to go too specifically into the settlement, but they did comment in the report, and one of their same comment they said is that when talking about the major improvement on the Autopilot functionality, they said, I'm quoting, "This has included an extensive overhaul of the underlying architecture of our Autopilot software that enabled a step change improvement in its machine learning capabilities." So that was a new comment, really, on what happened in March, the big update in March. A brand new machine learning system behind it. And I think that's the most interesting thing about Autopilot, is its ability to learn by itself. And with the ton of data that Tesla is getting for the Autopilot every day, you feed that into that machine learning system, and if there's a big improvement on it, we should see more actual improvement in functionality sooner rather than later. So that's the small silver lining out of that report that we posted on Tuesday. Yeah, it got killed pretty quickly it got lost inside all the news from the earnings the next day, but it's up on the next check if you guys want to read it. And we're gonna We gotta stop. I think right now we're already like 20 minutes over our regular time.
Yeah, I was gonna say we could talk about Model Y a little bit, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe next time, because we have like 250 people listening to us right now, unless you guys really want to us to talk about it. But otherwise, we're going to leave it for next time. All right. Thanks, Gally. Thanks, Seth. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure.
We'll see you on Electrek.